So the men were fine gathered, they came to the north. Why did you go wage war against the Bnei Ammon? You didn't call us to go to war with you, right? We're going to burn your house down in a fire. Now Ephraim was very proud. They went up to Gidon before, right? And they did that. So I would assume that they thought the same thing when it comes to Yiftach. I mean, why wouldn't it be the exact same thing? It could be. And this generation got worse and worse and worse as time went on. And by Gidon, it was already like, oh, we wanted to fight with you, whatever it is here. It was, they said, oh, fine, we would burn your house down, right? Almost like the three little pigs and the wolf. That might be the idea. It also could be that Yiftach was not on the same level, and that's the idea behind it. Maybe Gidon called Ephraim at the end of the campaign when they were fighting the war. But Yiftach never called them at all, whatsoever. That's that. But aside from that, there's an obvious reason over here. All the tribes that lived in Eretz Yisrael hated the tribes that lived the Aver HaYarden. They couldn't stand them. Now that the Aver HaYarden made a leadership position, and they showed that Gidon can fight the war, something Yiftach fought the war, something that they themselves were refusing to do, Ephraim was jealous. And they came out in a very, very upset place. And that was the line. They said, who appointed you as leader of the Jewish people? We weren't asked. Gila never had the right to appoint you, and that's the idea. So, but Yiftach Alayim, it says in Puzzle Face. This is that on Ish Riv HaYizyani, right? I have been a fighter of the Ammonim. Ami ubnei Ammon ma'od. I've been fighting them a lot. But Ezek has come to the Shatam was in the Yavi. And I did call to you, and I asked you to come help, and you didn't come in to save them. So in other words, your bravado was saying, like, we would have come if we would have been called. You were called, you did not come. But Erek in Chomoshia, I saw that you weren't trying to save them. And I put my soul into my own hands. But Ebrol bnei Ammon, I crossed over to the bnei Ammon. And Hashem put them into my hands. So why are you trying to fight me on this day? Now, you could have done this. You could have, you had the chance and you refused, and that's why it was given over to my hands. But both Yiftach was calling to Gilad. So Yiftach and Pasuk Dalet gathered all the people of Gilad. Yilachom is Ephraim. They waged war with Ephraim. But Yaakov watched Gilad as Ephraim, and they destroyed them. You are the remnants of Ephraim. You are the outcasts of Ephraim. You are in the midst of the land of Ephraim and Asher. There's a big question who the outcasts were. Some say that Ephraim was calling them outcasts. They just live on the other side of the Jordan River. So therefore they said, no, we're the Iker, and they fought against Ephraim, and that was the idea behind it. Otherwise, Ephraim was saying, you outcasts, you owe us Karas HaTov because we've saved you over the last bunch of years, and now all of a sudden you think you're strong enough, you're able to win the war. Maybe that's what they say. The other way of looking at it is that Menashe was saying to Ephraim that they're now outcasts because they didn't want to be in the same way. That's the third way of looking it up, although that I didn't see anywhere that I made up a mail. What do you guys say?
What's
the line? Yeah, so the line is, you are the remnants of Ephraim, you, O Gilad, or those people that are of Gilad. Besok Ephraim, besok Menashe. Those within Ephraim, those within Menashe. And that's what we're saying. It's a question how to read that line exactly. Is that Plite Ephraim Atem Gilad, that the remnants of Ephraim, the outcasts of Ephraim, are taken over by Gilad? Or is that Ephraim is saying that the outcast of us is now in you, the Gilad? Besok Ephraim, besok Menashe? That's the question. But one way or another, somebody was insulting the other. Either it was Ephraim insulting Menashe, or Menashe was insulting Ephraim. Says Pasukei, but Yokud Gilad is Mabros Hayardim Ephraim. So Gilad conquered all the crossings of the Jordan River by Ephraim. Hayyuk Yomru Pelite Ephraim Avora. When any survivors of Ephraim wanted to pass by the Yomru Lanche Gilad, the people of Gilad would say, Afrosiato? They would say, are you an Afrosi? But Yomru Lo. And the guy would say, no. Now, after a while, that wasn't good enough. A lot of people lied. They said, yeah, we're from Menashe. Yeah, we're from Menashe. And they lied completely. But Yomru Lo, Emorna Shibolas. Say the word Shibolas, right? By Yomer, Shibolas. If he could not pronounce the sh sound, Lo Yochin Ledaber Kane, right? If he wasn't able to say it correctly, by Yokzozo, they grabbed him, by Yishchatu El Mabro Zayardin, and they shechted him at the crossing of the Jordan River. Yivol Bezim Ephraim, Arbayim Ushnaim Allah. 42,000 people were there from Ephraim. Now, it's possible that this is a good thing altogether. Maybe the reason why they said Shibolas was because that was a stream, and they were just saying, let us cross the stream. Or maybe it's something else. Sibolas was the way that they talked to their idol. The idol of Ephraim was Baal. Baal was the name of their idol. So you could look at it one to two different ways. Either they wanted to weed out the Obdei Avodah Zarah who worshipped Baal, so they had them say Baal, or it was a dirty trick. They wanted them to say the word Sibolas, which was, we're going to our idol, and then they would kill him for idolatry. So it was a dirty trick. They just got them to say something, which they couldn't say any other way, and that's that. Okay, so that was that and everything else. There is a third explanation, and Binyamin, you're going to like this a little bit, but the reason why the tribe of Ephraim attacked Yiftach was because he had sacrificed his daughter. They were so outraged that a leader of the people would do such a thing, right, that they wanted to fight him immediately, but the people of Gilead stood behind him, and they won. Menasha won with Yiftach. Okay, by the way, Pentecost was... every Rishon says that he sacrificed her. The Radak, the Ralbad, even the crazy shot-like Rishonim, who this is so strange, they all say that he sacrificed her. It's very few that say, I forgot who it is. There's one Rishon that says that she wasn't sacrificed. Only one. All right, anyway. Rashi says she was sacrificed. Well, by Rashi not saying anything, it means that she was sacrificed. I don't think Rashi says a thing. Yiftach judged Bnei Yisrael for 6 years. By Yamos Yiftach Gilad, by Kavar Be'orei Gilad, he died, and he was buried in the cities of Gilad. As we said before, the punishment that he had for making this nether and not getting it matzer was that he had atrophy. His body atrophied. All parts of his body. He lost an arm, then he lost another arm, then he lost a leg, then he lost another leg, then he lost an ear, then he lost whatever. He was buried all throughout the Gilad. There was not one just place. But he spoke after Israel, Ibsam, he based on after that, Ibsam, who was Boaz, came up after that. Ibsam is the word Sanan. He cooled down his Yetzirah. He was able to cool down his Yetzirah when Rus was in bed with him. Boaz is that he had the strength to conquer his Yetzirah. Those were the names that he was given, Ibsam and Boaz. Me based welcome, he came from Bethlehem, right? He was from the Davidic line all the way through. Some say he was Avson, the father of the sheep, meaning the leader of the Jewish people, and that's what he was done. And that, it says, he had 30 sons and 30 daughters. That's pretty darn awesome. All one wife, I would assume. Shilach Hachutza, and the 30 daughters he sent out. Shloshim Banos Hevi Levanov, Min Hachutz. Those 30 daughters, he brought in 30 daughter-in-laws. He brought in for his sons. And he judged Bnei Yisrael for 7 years. He died, and he's buried in Beis Lachem. Why did he die? When David HaMelech was born, when Obed was found in Rus, how did he have no time with Rus already? So there's two different answers to the question. One opinion says that Boaz was extremely old when he was appointed judge. He was born before Gidon, but he was not appointed then because there were other people that were greater than him. Only when he was an old man did he become a judge. And then that's the first time that he got judged. Also, the other answer is that even if he wasn't so old, he was blamed for one thing. He did not show proper respect for Ami Aratzim. He had 60 weddings altogether. 30 sons, 30 daughters. He made 60 weddings. He did not invite Manoah, the father of Shimshon, to any of them. Because he said, Manoah will never have a child. And Manoah is an Amaretz. I don't want an Amaretz eating at my table. So he didn't invite him. Because he didn't invite him, he didn't invite Manoah for anything, therefore he was blamed for that. It's funny because if you look at the Navi and Rus, the word Manoah appears twice. I have no idea why. But twice in the middle, just the word Manoah appears there. It's an interesting little drush that you can take from there. But either way, that's that.
Because you lived in different areas, so they know each other. You still lived in Bethlehem, and Manoah lived in Dun.
That's not so far away. Dun was south, remember. And Beis Lechem is toward the left, toward the west themselves.
Oh, but isn't Kever Shimshon is like near Beit Shemesh area?
That is correct. That was around there, but that's not so far away. We're not talking about such a far place. Those were right next to each other, within a couple hours of each other. So that would be the problem behind it. And also, Manoah was famous, mostly because of his wife, but he was famous. We'll get to that. But that is the Gemara. The Gemara says this in Bava Basra, Sadi Aleph on the Beis. All right, the next one. Elon Hazvulani. We know nothing of this guy. Elon Hazvulani, right? He ruled over for 10 years. Elon Hazvulani. He was buried near Sha'alvim. Avdon Ben Hillel. Sony, then Avdon ben Hillel Pir Sony, Bayu Arboim Banim Rishloshim Bnei Banim. He had 40 sons, 30 grandsons, Rochel Rav Shishim, Shivim Ayarim. They were riding on 70 donkeys altogether. Each one is Zosh Monashanim. He judged Bnei Israel for 8 years. He was Avdon ben Hillel Pir Sony, but he covered for Pir Sony there. It's a fine Bahamaleki near the mountain of the Amalekin. And that's that. They both lived during periods of peace, so we know absolutely nothing about them. I do not believe there's a single medrash about Elon or Avdon. They were tremendous tzaddikim, obviously deserving to be mentioned in Shoftim, but that's that. Let's get to the meat of Shoftim, the last of the main judges that we talk about every year, since Eli HaKohen and Shmuel HaNavi were the last two Shoftim, are not mentioned in the Sefer. These are the big ones over here. It says, in Perek Yud Gimel, there's even Bnei Yisrael lost his Rabbi and Hashem, but he named Hashem via Plishim, Rabbi Yishana. Bnei Yisrael started to do evil in the eyes of Hashem again, and Hashem put them in the hands of the Plishim for 40 years around. Now, where did the Plishim come from? Where are these people originally from? Possibly, they're related to the Greeks and the Cretes. The Greeks and the Cretes, they may have come from the island of Crete and come over to Eretz Yisrael at some point, and they traveled straight down to Gaza. They lived around that nation in and of itself. Some say that Shamgar ben Anas, if you remember him, all the way the third judge altogether, he fought against the Plishtim, but they were not the primary enemies. They were a small enemy. They never really did anything. Soon afterward, the Plishtim grew and grew and grew until they became a powerful nation, and now is when they first started to rule over Bnei Yisrael. It says in Pasuk Beis, Yisha there was a man from Tzara, right? It's right in between the territories of Yehuda and Dan. Shmo Manoah, his name was Manoah, his wife was barren and could not give birth, because I'll learn from over here, because obviously if you're barren and you can give birth, that sort of defeats the purpose. Barren and doesn't give birth means she didn't even have a womb. She did not have a velad, nothing whatsoever. Tzalkunis may have been from Mishpachas Yehuda, which meant that they were an ostracized family, because even back then it was considered strange to marry outside of your tribe. So Tzalpunis, which was the wife of Manoah, I should have said that, Tzalpunis, mentioned over there in Bav Basra as well, could be a Yehuda. Notice, it's an Ish Echad Mitzara. It's a title of respect. He may not have been a Talmud Chacham, but he definitely was a good man. That's the idea behind it. Okay, so that's that. Even though Dun was the lowest of the tribes, we're going to see that whatever it was, there are those that say that Manoah was one of the 31 righteous people of his generation from the gematria of the word Vayehi. That Vayehi tells us that from that gematria we learned that he's one of the 31 righteous people of the generation. Also, we're trying to say over here, she was barren, she couldn't give birth, but Manoah was not. Manoah was righteous and could have had children. If everything else was all good, he could have had children, but his wife was barren. By Yerah Malach Hashem Elisha, the Malach Hashem appears to the woman by Yom Ha'elani, says, where you may not ask a car of the Yolad, the Arisu Yolad is saying. Here, we have the concept of, I guess you could say, immaculate conception. The concept that the Goyim come up with when it comes to their god, Yashka. That idea, which I have over here, I know I'm trying to be careful over here. It says, look clearly at how it says it. Nina'at akara, you are barren. The lo yaladitz, and you couldn't give birth. The haris, you are now pregnant. The yaladitz bein, and you will give birth to a child. How did she become pregnant? Was she just with Manoah? No, clearly she just became pregnant, so to speak. That's the idea behind it. Rashi in the Chumash by, can't remember where it was. Give me a second. I don't remember where, but there's the exact same Lashon. Rashi quotes this pasuk to prove that it wasn't immaculate conception. It means you will become pregnant. Oh, by sorry, maybe. It's the exact same line. The Malach told her she would become pregnant. The exact same line is used to show that it doesn't mean literally right now she's pregnant, but that she will become pregnant. That's that. Very, very good. If that's true, I have no idea. I'm not good at dictating. If that's true, then we have it perfect over here. And it should be perfectly fine. Yeah. I mean, it's clear also that the whole method was only given to Tzalpunit. It wasn't given over to Manoah, right? But it was clearly supposed to be because she's going to be the one who's going to take care of Shimshon more than anybody else. Yatzol. He's shomrin of altish yain the sheikh of altol kli kol tomei. Now you got to be careful. You are not allowed to drink wine or beer or anything, you know, that can make you drunk. And you cannot eat anything that is tomei. Kinaf kora, you're allowed to bain because you are pregnant. You will give birth to a child. Mora lo yala rosh, you cannot put a razor on top of his head. Kinezir lo kimia namina boten, because a nazir of God will he be from the womb. He will start to save Bnei Yisrael from the pollution. That line, remember this line, he will start to save Bnei Yisrael from the pollution, is a strange line. We're going to use it over and over and over again to show the Nebuah of Shimshon that he's going to be by himself, number one. Number two, he's going to start but not finish it. He will never be able to finish the job. He will never be able to do it. This is the concept of Nazir Shimshon. Nazir Shimshon is it's almost an intrinsic part of the being of Shimshon. Everything that he was all about is that he was a Nazir. Normally, a father can make a Nazir, but a father cannot make a Nazir when the child isn't even conceptualized yet. You can't say, the child that I will have next time will be a Nazir. That doesn't count as anything because it's not I'm anything. There's nothing to be chal on. That cannot happen. Over here, Manoach didn't even make him into a Nazir. Nazir Shimshon is a different story altogether. The angel informed Manoach and his wife that the status of the child was that he's going to be a Nazir Shimshon, not that he was making him into a Nazir Shimshon. The difference is, and there's a machlokes about this, can a Nazir Shimshon be metame lemason? He can't drink. That is clear.
There's a whole point of Nazir Shimshon.
I'm sorry?
There's a whole point of Nazir Shimshon.
That's a machlokes. It's a machlokes whether he can't be metame lemason. And that's machlokes later on. Maybe that's the reason why he used a donkey jawbone to kill the Pelishtim, because he couldn't kill them directly, and he couldn't even kill them with metal because he would be metamel mason. So therefore instead he had to kill them with a jawbone so that he wouldn't touch them. That already is machlokas. Some say he's metamel mason, some say not.
When he took away all their clothes.
I'm sorry?
When he gave their clothes off.
So, great question. We're going to get to it. We're going to get to it. But the main answer that's given, the Miyamali brings it, but I think it's straight out from a Ralbag or a Radak. They were not dead yet when he touched them and when he grabbed the clothing off them. They were dying, but they were not dead yet. That's the answer that it gives. Also, notice over here, normally a Nazir is a Nazir of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei. Over here, he says he's a Nazir Elokim, Nazir Elokim, that it's a Midas Adin. It's going to be a Nazir for the purpose of doing din. Purpose of doing din. That's the idea behind it. And we're going to deal with this in and of itself. Okay. That is that. When was she conceived? Okay, over there. The word mora is not a very common word. The real word should have been tar. Tar lo yavol rosh, which is a razor. What does the word mora mean over here? So mora comes from the word yore, which means to throw. Yoro yi yore, by what's it called? By Har Sinai, right? And it throws the hair off the head. So that's an idea behind it. Others say that it's mora, as in fear. No fear will ever come upon his head. He will never be afraid of anything. Also, the reason why he has to be a Nazir Elohim, why did he have to be a Nazir? What was the purpose of him being a Nazir? It's because he is the exact opposite of what the Pelishtim stood for. The Pelishtim stood, they were a selfish, hedonistic people that only cared about themselves. They didn't care about anything else whatsoever. Everything they did was into parties and doing this and that and the other. Notice all the boys that were there available for Shimshon's wedding to just stand around and do absolutely nothing. The Pelishtim were into their own pleasures and doing whatever they wanted. They had nothing to do with abstention, self-control, or anything like that. Shimshon had to be the opposite of that. Shimshon had to be the opposite in self-control, be able to self-control. We're going to see he's going to be an extreme. In order to be this type of a Nazir, he was going to have an extremely violent and impulsive nature. He's going to have unbelievable physical strength, and he's going to have strong desires, more desire than anybody else, as we'll see from how many people he was able to make pregnant, as well as anger, unbelievable anger, and everything that he had. He needed this type of extreme character in order to fulfill his task in this world of being a Nazir. Shimshon despised the Pelishtim and everything they stood for. They were the exact opposite of him. And because he hated them so much, it shows you that he didn't want to just marry a woman from the Pelishtim. He clearly was doing this because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to. He stood for the exact opposite of what it was. That was the idea behind it. He was a pure man of God for his whole life, a up until he went to the Pleshim. And that's what makes it so shocking. We'll see in a second, but that's the idea. This is so important, and why he had to be this way with these extremes of anger and this and that and the other. It's because if the Pleshim pulled him over to their side, this would be the worst thing in the world. And that's what they wanted to make sure. They wanted to make sure that that would never happen, that the Pleshim would never take him. Now, Batovah Elisha, we're going to see later on a little bit more about this. Batovah Elisha, Batovah Elisha. The woman came and told her husband in Pasuk Vav, but Lamor saying, Isha Elohim Bo'ilai, a man of God came to him, Arehu Kamari Malach Elohim, he looked like an angel of God, no remote, very awesome. But Lo Shel Tzi Lamor said, I didn't ask him where he was from, he didn't tell me his name. He told me that you're pregnant, you're going to give birth to a child. I'll tell Tishti Yai Meshech, I'll tell Kol Tuma, do not drink any wine or any, you know, intoxicating drink, don't eat anything. Tell me, can you zero look at me? Yeah, now I mean, Abethan and Gilmosa. Pretty much the exact same thing, although she added words. Okay? The angel said that he would be a Nazir from the womb. She said, Ad Yomoso, until the day of his death. This may have been a Nevuah. This may have been a Nevuah, or maybe it's something a little bit different. Notice something else. She did not mention anything about the hair. She said, won't drink wine or beer, won't eat anything, tummy, but did not mention anything about the hair. But the angel specifically said, More lo yalo rosha, that there can't be anything on his head. So what's pshat? She didn't mention the razor, but she added words about the tumor over here. So what's the pshat behind it?
It wasn't relevant.
I'm sorry?
It wasn't immediately relevant.
Good answer. Good answer. Very, very good answer. That is 100% true. The other answer is like this. That is one of the answers, by the way. But another answer is like this. She did not mention the hair because she knew through some, however she knew, that the hair was going to be his mission as the Redeemer for Bnei Yisrael. It was going to be the hair where his power came from. No one could know where Shimshon's power lied. So she didn't even tell her husband about the hair thing. The hair was so not important. The fact that the Malach mentioned it means that it was important. But she didn't want to mention it just in case. She was worried about what would happen if somebody would know. But the diet, her husband would have to know. He would have to know that he wasn't going to eat any grapes or he wasn't going to have any wine or anything like that. That was immediate. That was something that she had to do completely. And therefore, he had to know something like that. Why did he stand until the womb? The Malach couldn't mention until the end of his life. Why? Because he wasn't in Nazir until the end of his life. Why wasn't he? He was shaved. That is correct, my friend. He was shaved before he died. He was shaved before he died, which means he would not be another Shimshon until the end of his life. She thought he would be and was surprised the Malach didn't mention him, but the Malach didn't mention it because it wasn't true.
Doesn't change anything.
He was, but another Shimshon is somebody who does not cut his hair until the end of his life. That didn't happen.
You can't get rid of that. You can't get rid of another Shimshon.
You but cannot.
Even if like you drink wine all day, you're still another Shimshon. You're just being over on your dinner. You don't lose the status of another Shimshon, though.
The hair may do it. The hair may complete it. May destroy it. You might be another Shimshon at that moment when you're cutting the hair. You might go back to being right afterward. Maybe there is a Nazirus that happens right afterward, but you're not at that moment. When you're drinking wine, you are, though, correct. If you do drink wine, but hair, I don't know if it's the exact same thing. Anyway, I like your secret boy. The secret is the best. What?
He's not to shave his beard.
Is anyone allowed to shave his beard?
I'm not talking all the way down. I'm talking about...
I don't think so. I don't think he was allowed to... A Nazir is not allowed to touch his hair at all. So probably not.
Any hair on the body.
Yeah, any hair on the body. You know what? I don't know about the hair on the body. I don't remember seeing that in the Gemara Nazir. I don't think the Gemara Nazir mentions that. So I actually don't know about that. But I would assume, listen, the halakha is you're not allowed to shave the hair on your body. It's the Gemara on Shabbos, right? And the Gemara says you can't cut two hairs off your body on Shabbos. And right after a Rabbi Avoh or somebody comes up and says, you can't even do that during the weekday, why mention Shabbos? So that already is a different issue. But obviously it's different when men shave their hairs of their body, then those things can be mastered in a way. But that's the idea behind it. All right, here we go then. This is the real part of Shemshon. Pasuk Ches. Vayetzem Manoach al Hashem. Manoach daven to Hashem. Vayomer vi'adonoi. Please, my master, really referring to either my master Hashem or the man, Isha Lema Shishalakta. And this clearly is referring to Hashem, though. Isha Lema Shishalakta, the man of God that you sent, Yavona Od Eilenu, send him again to us, Yorinu Manasa Lenara Yulad. Tell us what to do with this child. Yishma Elohim Bekol Manoach. The God listened to Bekol Manoach, Yavon Malach Elohim Od Eilishan. The Malach Elohim again appeared to the woman, not the man, by the way. The woman knew that Manoach's tefillah the Manoah Tefillah would immediately be accepted. She went right back out that very day to the same field to go see the Malach again. She knew that it would be accepted. She was sitting in the field waiting for the Malach to happen. Manoah Isha Inima. But her husband Manoah wasn't there because he was still davening. The woman went and ran and told her husband, she said to him, the man that came to me today, he's here. He came immediately. So we're ready. Now, what was Manoah thinking? What did he really want? He was told everything. If there was anything else he needed to know, you don't think the Malach would have told it to Ishus Manoah? Well, what did he want? Look at the wording of Manoah. He said, what should we do? He said, listen, this makes no sense. We're going to tell the kid, okay, the kid's going to be born, and we're going to say to him, you're a Nazir Elohim. Oh man, sorry, Benjamin. You're a Nazir Elohim, okay? You're a guy who's, you're not going to be able to eat anything, grapes or wine or whatever it is. You can't shave your head, and maybe you can't even do anything to me. But we're able to do whatever we want. What kind of a parent tells a kid, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do this, but they themselves do whatever the heck they want? If you're going to watch a movie, then your kids have to watch movies. You can't tell your kids, you can't watch movies, but I can. If you're going to eat a certain type of candy or whatever it is, then your kids get to have a candy. You can't expect them to be anything different. So what shot that we say that... That's the idea. My master, what should we do? Should we become Nazirim as well? That's what he wanted, more information.
Questions?
Yeah.
Well, like, there's a switch from Bayer and Malach Hashem, the first one, to Malach Elohim, the second one.
Yeah. And second one?
The second one was, his lesson throughout was, Yavanah Odeleinu and Yorinu. That he's also like, he's saying that Malach came to both of them, that never happened.
Well, no, he should come to us and teach us. And that is what happened, because the Malach stayed. Yeah, meaning it should come to us, meaning it should come to us. Oh, again?
Yes.
Well, I hear that, but I think his line is just that he should come again, and it should be to us this time. Like, if I was saying in English, it would say, let the Malach come again, this time to both of us. That's what he's saying. And eventually, he did go out there. The question of the Malach Elohim and the Malach Hashem, I don't have an answer. The assumption would be that the first time was Malach Hashem of Racham. Notice, by the way, that she herself said his Mare was Mare Malach Elohim. It was a Malach. She said he looked like a Malach of Elohim. But it could be that the first time was out of Rachman. This time he has to come out of Midas Adin because he davened for him to come. And Noach davened for the Malach to come. It could be that was the difference between them, but I don't have a good answer for that. But Manoah got up and went after his wife. That is a criticized. There is criticized. He is criticized for having done so. You're not allowed to walk behind a woman. He's criticized and called an Amaharetz for this. Either way, regardless, but what? For walking behind his wife.
That's his wife.
Doesn't matter. You're never allowed to walk behind the wife. You can walk together or in front, but you're not supposed to walk behind. That is the Gemara. But either way,
very progressive.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the reason. But Yavo Elaish, and he came to the man, thinking that it was a man. But Yavo Elaish, are you the man that spoke to my wife? Tell over your words, what will be the judgment of this Na'ar Maseo and everything that needs to be going through the laws? What laws are going to apply to him? What exactly? Just clarify everything so we don't have any assumptions, because it's obviously a big deal that we have to be involved with. The Malach Hashem said to Noah, Mikola Shamarki Elisha Tishomer. Everything I told the woman to do, you should keep. Don't eat anything that comes from grapes. Don't eat anything Tishmor. You got to keep careful and keep everything that I commanded her to do. Notice the words Tishomer, Tishmor. He's told Manoah, you want to know what you have to do? Everything that I commanded the kid to do. You have to act in accordance with whatever the kid has to do. You have to do it as well. You asked a question about chinuch. Not a full nazir, but he's going to act as if that was going to be the kid. You're right, but the original question that Manoah had asked was, what should we do? But now he said to the Malach, so what's the deal with the kid? So the Malach is answering both. Number one, what the kid is going to do. Number two, Tishamer, you are going to keep it as well. You can't let the kid do it by himself. You also have to be involved. All that was from the Chassam Sofer. But Manoah, let us hold you back a little bit, and let's make in front of you a Gideizim. Let me make you some type of a goat. Right? That's what he wanted over here. If you hold me back, I will not eat your bread. But if you want to make an olah, then you can go ahead and do it. Ta'alena. Kiloyda Menoch Yimalach Hashem. Menoch didn't realize it was a Malach. Now, what's the difference? How come Avraham's Malachim ate, but Menoch's Malach did not eat? The answer is obvious. Avraham Avinu had a whole idea of Achnasa Zorka. He brought him into the house, and that's what they were sent for in the first place. So they had to eat because that's the idea of what they were sent for in the first place. Menoch's Malach was not there for Achnasa Zorka. It was just out of gratitude. He wasn't inviting him over to his house to sleep overnight. He said, I owe you something. I have a karas atov. Let me be able to give you something over here. That's that. But it seems like he didn't invite them, and that's the difference between them. Was he allowed to bring a korban outside of Shiloh? This is a big question. But there are exceptions. And since the Malach said, you want to give a korban, go ahead, he was allowed to bring it even though it was outside of Shiloh itself. Who is your name? That's a strange question. Shouldn't it be Mashmecha? What is your name? Ishamecha. Who is your name? So that when your word comes, we will honor you and praise you in front of others. Why are you asking for my name? It is a wonder. The word of Mishamecha is not what is your name. It's short for Mi Ato Umashamecha. That's the short for that. Okay, that's that. Some say that he wanted his complete personal name. He didn't want a title. He didn't want a nickname. Mi Shemecha, who calls you by your name? Meaning, what name are you used by everybody? And that's the idea of what he wanted. Now, the angel says, "Lama zeh tishalish mi?" Because the real thing is that malachim do not have names. They have missions, and it changes according to their missions. So the name of an angel is only temporary. So what, you want to think me later on? You can't, because my name now is going to change the next time I have it. So that's not going to happen. That's that. So that's not going to be whatsoever. Others say that the word Peli was his name. It means concealed. It's not going to be known, or separate or removed. It is not something that human understanding can understand. Or Peli is the word Pela, because the word the Nazir does something that's Mufla, something different, separate from other people. And therefore he was saying, my name is Peli, standing for I bring Nazirus into the world.
Yafli is the word used to describe it, or Yafli Nether?
Yafli is the word Nether, Nazir. Right. That's the idea behind it. That's
the idea. That Peli was his name?
Peli was his name, is the Malbin, right? But that's also brought down in, I saw from Chasam Sofer years ago. But he got Menoch and Gediyah Yizim, it says in Pasuk Yitzat, he took a Gediyah Yizim, that's a Menoch and a gift, by Yalal Atzor LaHashem, and he brought it up on top of the rock in front of Hashem, Matu Lasos, and he did in a wondrous way, or the Malach did wondrous things, and Menoch used to go in, Menoch and his wife saw it all, but he was Allah now, and his back as the flame went up from him, his back, some say it was from the heavens, Tasha Maima, they went back up to the heavens, by Al Malach Hashem, the Lahab on his back, the Malach Hashem went up in the fire of the Mizrach, Menoch and Yisrael going, they were watching it, but they fell down to their faces. That is pretty awesome. That is absolutely pretty awesome. Some say the flame came out of the rock, some say the flame came out of the Shemaim. Either way, the angel went absolutely up. Yisrael, no longer could they see the Malach Hashem. They thought it was a trick. Then they really knew that it was an angel. We might die because we have seen a God. Now, I don't think he was serious. I don't think he was serious. Like, oh my God, we're going to die now. Clearly, they're not going to die. They're going to have a child. And they were just told what to do with it. If God really wanted to kill us, you wouldn't have taken our korban, you wouldn't have shown us all this. We never seen such things. Why would he have done this over here? It's possible that what he meant was, Ki Elohim Ra'inu, not that we saw God, we saw Malachim. So the fact that we saw angels means we have ruined our schus. We no longer have any schuyos that we're able to see such wonders in this world. And he was saying, Oy bey, we have no schus. To which Menoch's wife said, there's no way this takes away from our schus. If it took away from our schus, that would make absolutely no sense. That would mean that we're not going to have this child, that we're going to have this child. There's one thing that I don't understand about all this. She says, we've never seen anybody give a korban and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu kills them. I mean, Hevel was killed right after he brought a korban. I don't understand what that means. We've never heard anything like that before. The first person to bring a korban, the second person to bring a korban, maybe the third if you count Adam, was Hevel. Hevel brought a korban and died immediately afterward. I don't understand what that means. I'm not.
God, you know,
I understand, but that meaning, let's go with the Pashup shot, that when a person kills somebody, then obviously a Kadosh Baruch Hu is involved, and you can't force God's hand on something. There's something...
But God also lets the world go according to the rules.
I definitely understand that. But you cannot say we have never seen such a thing happen. It has happened. People have died afterward, after bringing a korban. Whether naturally or through somebody killing them, people have died afterward. So the wording, I think, is strange. It should have been, we wouldn't be killed if we have a mission. That's the wording that she should use. To say we have never heard something like this before, that strikes me as being strange. Kasha, it's just a horror. It strikes me as being strange. All right, let's finish off the car.
And she kind of says that because she says,
I agree with that. That should be the end of the puzzle. Should be the end. Right there. No reason to go on after that. That's what I would think. The woman gave birth to a child. She called him Shimshon. He grew up and he was blessed by God. The Gemara brings down hundreds of pshatim over here. Spirit of God came to him at times in Matnadon between Sarah and Eshtaol. First, let's work on the name. The name Shimshon comes from the word son. He was a servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem. He had the power, so to speak, as a son. He shielded the people. He gave them light. However you want to put it. He was a son to Klal Yisrael. That's number one. Number two, what?
Shielding for.
Shielded and takes people away from darkness. That's what the son does. Does that. And so too, number two, Shamish is the word over here. That he served HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That he was a Shamish of HaKadosh Baruch Hu completely. If you want to define Shimshon's Nevuah, it was really like a bell. It didn't develop slowly. It didn't go whatever it was. It wasn't constant. It would strike him all of a sudden. It would just start ringing, like a massive bell just ringing. Chassam said, compare this, but like a church bell that just in the middle of nowhere, all of a sudden you know it's 10 o'clock. That's what it was by Shimshon. Shimshon had no, there was nothing. It just all of a sudden happened, and it would strike him suddenly, and he'd do amazing feats of might, and he had no warning for it whatsoever. He could uproot mountains that were between Sora and Eshtaol. He could crush them with one another. He was able to argue with the greatest men of his generation. It made everything he was able to do. It just, he was like that. And number two, that Chazal tell us that he had the Shechina by him like a ringing bell at all days. He never forgot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with him. No matter what he did, he always remembered that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with him. Okay. Here we go. Here at Shimshon Timnasa. Shimshon went down to Timnah Vayar Isha Vitimnasa. He saw a woman in the city of Timnah. From the people of the Pelishim, he told his father and his mother, I saw a woman among the Benos Pelishim, take her for me as a wife. Now look over here. Camp Adon is right over here on the side of Yehuda. You have Sora and Eshtaol right over there, Ayalon, Beit Shemesh right there. Timnah is right over there, right by the valley of Sorek near Ekron. This is the idea of him going across that area to go where the Pelishim were. That's what it's supposed to be. So that's that. Notice number one, it says he went down to Timnah. Now, Yehuda also went to Timnah, but in order to get to Timnah, he went up. Vayau Yehuda Timnasa. He went up to Timnah, and the pshat is, okay, it could be that it's two sides of a mountain. Right, that Timnah is on a mountain, and he went, Shimshon came from a higher mountain, while Yehuda came from a valley. That's possible. But it seems that Yehuda was raised by this idea of going to Timnah. Eventually, the house of David HaMelech came from Yehuda because he went to Timnah and he was able to be with Tamar. That's one way of looking at it. While Shimshon got shame, failure, disappointment, all the worst things in the world happened to him because he went down to Timnah. So that was a Yerida for him as opposed to an Aliyah. Now, what was the Yerida? The fact is, Shimshon was not punished for doing what he was supposed to do. He had a nevuah that he had to marry a Pelishti woman. But he should not have gone after his eyes. He should have picked the first woman that he saw and not the prettiest woman that he saw. The fact that he went after his eyes meant that he was going to be punished with his eyes. And that was the problem.
Wait a second. If God tells you, if you take your shikta, I mean, you might as well make the best of it,
huh? That's a good call, actually. But no. If Kadosh Baruch Hu tells you to take a shikta, if he wanted that specific one, he would have waited to tell you until you came to that one. The fact that Shimshon may have passed somebody over or waited for somebody that was good in his eyes, that was a problem, and that's the reason why he was very upsetting.
You know, would have found the first woman who had come along, and she was totally attractive, he wouldn't have been able to do what he wanted to do.
As we will see later on, Shimshon did not have a problem with that. That was with any time that he wanted to. One of his biggest powers was his ability to have Zera whenever he wanted it. Unfortunately, but that was one of the biggest powers that Shimshon had. We are going to speak about that. There is a machlokas brought down by the Rambam. The Rambam holds that Shimshon, without Akasha, converted this woman to Judaism. There is absolutely no question. And that's why it says the word kihu li'isha. Kiha is a lashon of kiddushin. There is no question he did that whatsoever. However, this Ruach HaKodesh was very strange. Imagine a rav. He's been a rav and a shofet of Klal Yisrael for 30 years, 35 years, however old he was at the time. And then all of a sudden he gets up one day and he says, all right, I'm going to go marry a plishti woman. His parents went crazy. They're just like, what the heck? Everybody went crazy. Anybody who knew Shimshon, and everybody did know Shimshon because he was a shofet for Klal Yisrael and everybody knew him, they all looked at him and said, what? When did this happen? Why are you marrying a goyish woman? It was a shocker to everybody. It would be chas v'shalom as if, you know, the Rosh Shiva of Skok Yeshiva got up one day and said, I'm going to go marry a goy. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. That's crazy. What were you going to say, Benjamin?
A simple line
to be able to answer that is that Plishtim are called a Reilim even if they have a Bris Milah. Jews are called Ruin even if they don't have a Bris Milah. It was a derogatory name used for the Plishtim themselves. That's one way to look at it. But another way to look at it, just to be able to say it a little bit differently, is there's no question that she did not behave as if she converted. What they were saying is you're converting her just to marry her, which technically works, but it's not something preferred. And they couldn't understand why he was doing that. That's the question. Why are you converting this woman just to marry her? Marry a regular Jewish woman, and then you don't have to worry about anything. That's what they were asking. So, v'yamalo avi v'imo, and pasuk gimel, ha'im v'bnos ha'checho v'chod ami, isha, what, is there no woman among all the daughters of your brothers and all of my people, a woman, kiat olos l'kachas isha v'plishtim ha'reilim, you're going to take other a woman from the plishtim that are arul, v'im r'shem shem l'avi v'osa kachli, take her from me, ki yasr v'enai, she's good in my eyes. V'avi v'imo lo yadu, ki me Hashem hi, his father and his mother had no idea that it was from Hashem, ki so anahu mevakesh m'plishtim, he was looking for an excuse, a pretext, to fight the Plishtim. But he said, you Plishtim Moshe on Yisrael. At that time, the Plishtim ruled over Bnei Yisrael. So that's really what the pshat is. She, don't worry, said Shimshon. I'm not doing this. His real point was a pretext. He wanted to fight against the Plishtim. That was the idea, and it was Ruach HaKodesh and that. But he wasn't allowed to say that whatsoever. He wasn't allowed to say anything whatsoever. He had to do this. Now, we have to be very clear about this. Shimshon is a snake. He is a nachash ale derech. He is a snake upon the path that is clear according to everybody. He strikes quickly and suddenly. He goes by himself. There is no defense against him. He must be by himself. And the reason why he wanted to marry the Plishtim is so that they wouldn't blame the Jewish people for what Shimshon was about to do. He wanted the Jews to remain fine without anything happening to them, and anything that would happen would be him on his head, and they would try to kill him, but not the other Jews. That's what Shimshon was trying to do over here, to show that he was on their side. By your Shimshon, I'll be emailed to Nelson. Went down to Timnavi Yavuat Karmi Timnasa. They came to the vineyards of Timnavi, and a Kfir Arayo showing the cross. There was a lion that cried out to greet him. Now, it seems that his mother and father went through the Kerem. Now, you're not allowed to, as a Nazir, you're not allowed to go through a Kerem. You're not allowed to go through a Kerem. It could be that his father and mother didn't worry about it because they felt that they had somebody watching over them. You're not allowed to go by yourself, but if you have somebody with you who's warning you not to eat, then you're allowed to go down into that. But Shimshon did not want to take that route, so he went around. It's possible that this is all a remez. And the remez is, the hint is that you're going into a dangerous situation in the Plishtim, and that Shimshon has to know this. And that's why the lion was going to come out, that a Kfir Arayah Shoei Glikrosso, he's trying to say, they are faithless women, they're wild and lawless, they're going to be unfaithful to you, right? And no matter what, Shimshon could not be dissuaded. He went to them even though he knew. But the lion is going to show him there's going to be spiritual danger, but Shimshon is going to overcome them with his physical strength, and that will give him confidence when he goes down there. He had the spirit of God on him. Now, I don't know if you've ever torn up a goat before, but it says he tore him up like one tears up a goat. I can't even tear up a phone book, let alone a goat, but I have no...
It is kind of how a lion tears up a goat.
It's weird. Kishasa, okay, maybe. That's weird also.
Oh, wait, no, it says here, it says in the speaker, that he grabs his leg, behind leg, and he rips him into two halves. And I think he's like, you know, meaning with the meat that you do to a goat, I guess the goat after you slaughter it, you hang it up and you cut it in half.
That's a possibility. Okay, that's cute. There was no question that first part is for sure true, because Mu'uma in Biyadu, he had nothing in his hands. He never told anybody what he had done. Now, by the way, this is not a full-grown lion. A kfir is a little bit older than a gur. It's not a cub, but it's not a full-grown lion. It's a middle-aged lion. Why didn't he tell his parents? Either number one, his humility. Number two, it was not significant whatsoever. He knew it was a sign. Number three, he knew that it was a message for him alone. He wasn't going to share it with anybody. He went down, he spoke to the woman, and she was good in his eyes, right? And it seemed that he saw that she was wise, virtuous, or whatever it is. It could be he didn't even speak to the woman, he spoke about the woman. That's the word La'isha instead of El-isha. El-isha. Vayashim Yamim Lakasa, he returned some days later, after a year maybe, to go take her and to marry her. Vayashim Lerosis Mapel Zariyah, he went down to go see what happened to the corpse of the lion, and he went down because he wanted to see what became of the simon. He had a simon of the lion. He wanted to see what was going to be. There was a beehive in the body of the lion, and now honey in there. And that significance is again going to give him strength and encouragement that he is going to be sweet after going into the lion's den, so to speak. Right? And he took some with his hand. He allowed to eat honey growing out of a lion's corpse. Would you eat honey growing out of a lion's corpse? He went and he ate. And he came to his father and his mother to eat him. And he gave them his own. And they ate. He didn't tell anyone because he didn't want anyone to know. He knew he was going to use this somehow. He just didn't know what he was going to do. That is the idea behind it. Either way, regardless. So his father went down to the woman. Okay, so they made a party there. Shimshon made a party. He came to Asaf. That's what the young men did. They saw him. So the father of the woman brought 30 men. It's 30 friends, so to speak, to be with them during that time. I'm going to give you a riddle. If you can tell me the solution to the riddle, she was going to have during the 7 days of the Mishnah. Then good, you'll get something. I'll give you 30 sheep and 30 changes of clothing. Oh, hold on. I didn't realize what time it was. We got to stop right here because of Marit. We'll stop right here, okay?